on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step, day by day, I'm on the run to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God.
All right, how's everybody doing tonight? Good? Awesome, fantastic, cool beans. All right, we got a couple announcements real quick. We are all guests here, so we ask that you please keep your feet off the kneelers in the pews. We also have a cry room for parents with small kids, or if you know anybody who has small kids and they're looking for a meeting to go to that has a cry room, we have a cry room. Cool. All right. We also got a couple more things. Shout out to Wayne in Sydney, Australia, who's been listening to us on podcast and is coming down in October. So we got a shout out from Sydney, Australia. It's pretty cool. Yeah, Wayne. Shout out. All right, cool. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Danny. Hi. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or that might slash will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Yep. All right. Cool. Let's get started. I'm going to ask you guys to join me in the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, there should be little cards in the pew in front of you. All right, God. Let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. Awesome. There is a solution. From the big book, page 17, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I have asked Kurt to come up and read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. Kurt.
Thanks. My name is Kirk, and I'm an alcoholic. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers this impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate, overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of a newcomer are aware of the difference long before he himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped into an unsuspected inner source which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think of this awareness of a power greater than ourselves as the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation, Herbert Spencer.
All right, thank you, Kurt. So please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane/meeting mode or just turn them off. All right, so we have Peter speaking tonight. However, he is going on an adventure next weekend. It's a secret adventure. I don't know what it is. And Stevie B will be joining us, so we have the pleasure of that happening. But tonight we have Peter. Every time I hear Peter speak, I get something new and exciting out of it, so I'm interested to find out what that's going to be tonight. Peter?
Here you go. Thanks. Okay. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. This podium is not centered. There's my OCD kicking in. Okay, thank you. Sorry about last week. We were out in Seattle and took a trip over to a town called Bellingham. And it was a long, long way from South Florida. How me and my fiance got together is a whole God story, because I was in Jersey and she's out there and couldn't get any further. I was about an hour from Canada, and it was pretty interesting. I was asked to give a talk on Friday night while I was there, and it was a room about this big. Lots of folks knew me except for this one woman. She came up to me. She says, "Are you nervous?" And I said, "No, I'm okay." She says, "Well, we're excited to hear you. How long are you sober?" And I said, "I have one day back." And the reaction on her was pretty interesting. I'll speak to the committee before you speak. But it's good to be back here. I'm amazed that some of the scenery, if anyone's ever been to Utah, Colorado, and take a look at some of those mountains. And I got to look at Mount Baker and Mount Rainier. And just looking at these views, you realize really how small you really are and how fragile you really are by looking at these mountains overlooking the whole state. It's absolutely incredible, and I was really glad I was out there. But much more glad to be home, thank God. June 23rd, 1988 was my separation from alcohol. And my life has taken on new meaning. He just read something, a profound alteration in our reaction to life. Very, very clear words, very profound words. And we have to, I'm sitting there thinking, prior to the spiritual transformation, what was my reaction to life? Nothing like it is now, and I still have so much more to grow, so much more work to do. But what's our reaction to life prior to a spiritual transformation? And the spiritual transformation, not that I'm the one judging, hey, I've had a spiritual transformation, because usually means I haven't, but based on how people are reacting to me and my reaction to them. Very often in early sobriety for me, my day hinged on what you thought of me, how you reacted to me, what kind of mood you were in, what was going on in my little network, who was in a good mood, who was in a bad mood, the boss was in a good mood, it went on and on and on. And if you get into relationship, that's when you find your defects of character, by the way, and based on what she was doing, really determined how I was going to do for the day. And my reaction to life was not good. This is sober, by the way. Prior to a spiritual experience, when I was out there using, it was just all about me, total self-centered, total self-seeking, an ego to side of this room, and fear-based and driven by 100 forms of fear. But I get sober thinking, okay, I'm not using, I'm good. The solution has arrived, I'm not using, and I'm going to meetings, but I'm finding myself not really doing well with life. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, how free do we want to be? Because we can tap into this power inside that is much greater than what is in the world. And once we tap into this power, we will see how this God will take us to places you can't volunteer to go to. Like step 9. Like showing up with someone's doorstep and about to not make the approach and speaking to them and completing the amends by making it right. That's a place God takes us that we normally won't volunteer to go to. Oh, sure, day one, I can't wait to get out there and see all those people I harm and make it right and pay them the money back. It's not something we're looking to do. Because even though I'm newly sober, or perhaps around here a little while and sober a longer amount of time, it doesn't mean I'm much better on the inside. I mean, there is some improvement based on my experience. I'm not using, which means I'm probably not stealing. I'm probably bathing regularly. I'm probably eating regularly. And I'm probably washing my clothes regularly. And then after that, it's a question mark. I'm going to meetings. I have a coffee commitment. I'm greeting at the door. But there's nothing going on in this. I'm not working out in the spiritual gym. So my reaction to life is the same, except I don't have a drink in me. And for me personally, I don't do well with just abstinence. I don't do well with life with no spiritual muscles. I've said this from a million podiums. I'm probably more dangerous sober without a God in my life than drunk. Because when I'm drunk, I'm predictable. I drink and do pills, and then I pass out. I'll tell you about my tales of woe. I'll make you cry. You feel sorry for me. I'll bump some money off you. And then I'll pass out. It's when I come to and I'm shaking. That's when I'm dangerous, because that's when I go steal and do a lot of ugly things. And then I drink and pass out. So I'm very predictable. So when I'm sober, you just stay away from me. But when I'm sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm having a month, 2 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, or so on, and I'm not doing anything for the spiritual peace, which is the whole thing, my reaction to life is poor at best. Because it's always about me. I'm running around with untreated self-centeredness. And I'm still expecting my piece of the pie. I'm still expecting people to give me things without working for them. I get a job on Monday, I want to be CEO on Tuesday. And I get really angry when I don't get the promotion. And this is how I react to life. And more than that, early in recovery, when I would hear stories about people going back to make amends to those they harmed, and even to make amends to those they harmed, those people harmed them as well, I thought a lunacy commission should be appointed for some of you. And I says, there's no way I'm ever going to get there. And if I do, I'm not going to do that. It's silly. It's cowardly. Why would I want to show up to someone's door, hat in hand, a force feeding of humility to make it right? But God put some really neat teachers in my life, quickly, who were walking this path, who had spiritual muscles, who were in what we call the sunlight of the Spirit. And their reaction to life was vastly different than mine and a lot of other folks. Now, the interesting thing is, these folks, and I've experienced this, and anyone who's doing this book and walking in the light knows exactly what I'm talking about. When you look at it from where I am at a newcomer, as a newcomer looking at these folks, it looks wonderful until you get there and you find out very often it's a lonely road. Because even your peers are not doing what you're doing. We're friends, but they're not chopping the wood and carrying the water like you are. They're not dedicated to prayer. They're not dedicated to God. There is really no loyalty. They call on God when they're in trouble. And as far as making amends, they've done a couple and bailed. There's no nightly review. There's no prayer, meditation, discipline. There haven't been discipline to a spiritual life. But we're making meetings sober and sponsoring people, and for them that works. And here you are doing all of this work that you get to do, and you find yourself reacting to them a little bit different than prior to the experience. And if anything like me, I would say, what am I doing wrong? How come I just see Joe a little bit different? And prior to this, we were arm in arm, and I'm looking at his reaction to life, and it's hurting me. And I would think something's wrong with me, simply outgrowing folks. With compassion, with empathy, but outgrowing folks. And the road gets very narrow, and it also gets lonely at times until we meet like-minded folks. And that's just the price to pay for a spiritual walk. How free do we want to be? If I have an 8-step list of 100 people, how many have I made out of that 100? Am I willing to go to every single person on that list, regardless of what they do with their life, from the drug dealers to gangsters to pimps to hookers, whatever it might be, old bartenders, liquor store owners, people placing things, I'm about to go in, do I really want to do that walk? Well, on the front end, no. In fact, even if I was willing to do that walk, I don't have the kind of strength or endurance to get me there. I don't have the power to go sit down with someone and say, I've wronged you and I'm here to make it right. That does not exist yet. But like if we use the gym as an analogy, the first time we go to a gym, maybe we can lift a couple of pounds and we're exhausted. But if we work out regularly in that gym, in about 6 months, we look like we've been working out in the gym and we gain strength and endurance. And that's what goes on in this path. And there's a whole process to get me to 9. And simply put, it's pruning of the tree, removing me, removing the old self, removing the old man. And what emerges is what looks like a new man, or the person that God put here in the first place. The Oxford group talked about purity, honesty, unselfishness, and love. And what this work does is take us back to that state of beingness, where I can't go another day without making this amends. I need to make this amends. It's too painful not to make the amends. And prior to that is I'll get to it when I get to it. I'm busy right now. It's a long time ago. I really don't want to uncover this stuff. If I'm doing that, I'm not the worst AA member, but I really need some work. I need to do some work because I'm not as spiritually fit as I like to think I am, nor is my willingness to go to any lengths there anymore. I've gotten comfortable. I'm resting on my laurels. And our book says alcohol is a subtle foe, and I need to be really aware and real careful when I'm starting to rest on my laurels. Step 9 for me and many others kind of hooks up the train to the engine. That's how we enter the world of the Spirit. We gain power. We gain real access power because I'm starting to get right with others here. I'm getting right with people. And once I start getting right with people around me, I find myself finally right with God, being in line with God, being in line with God's will. And my first few amends, I remember going out and making them. I was scared. I was frightened. I didn't know what to expect. It's my first one. I felt like I was out of the nest for the first time. And the first one, I think I talked about it a couple of weeks ago, was a phone call to a gentleman, Bobby, out in Hastings, Minnesota. And I loved the effect produced by that amend so much. I was doing like drive-by amends a couple of days later. I wanted to do more amends because I felt free from it. And there's no way I can be present if I'm still driven by voices of the past. And intuitive thinking comes from being current. And how do I get current? Because my past finally goes to sleep. I will use it to benefit others, to tell my story, to help others. It becomes my greatest asset. But I can't be living in the past. And if I have unfinished amends that I could be making without causing more harm, I'm still driven by voices of the past. I still have that shadow behind me. And if I see any of those folks, I need to run for cover. I need to make up a story. That's not freedom. That's bondage of self. It really is testimony to where I am with God when I go out and make some of those difficult amends, because in three I turned it over, and I'm hopefully by now walking with confidence in God that God's going to do for me what I can't do for myself, and how to approach the man I hated will arise, and God's going to allow me to navigate through that. I got a new GPS, if you will. Now, Big Book says some interesting things about step nine, and one of them, you know, flies in the face of some of our contemporary AA meetings. It says, we feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. Don't drink and go to meetings. I didn't think drink today, I'm a winner. That's it, period. End of story. We're good. Pass the basket. Come here, tell my war story. You share, we share. We share the same problem for an hour. Very little or no solution. We say the Lord's Prayer and we go home. Great meeting. I could have done that in the Knights of Columbus. What are we talking about living in a solution? Are we talking about God? Are we singing his praise? Are we glorifying God in Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh, that's a little radical. No, it isn't. Who put this together? It's his house. So we feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined and says everything's okay, there's nothing wrong here. And for me, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, my family was infighting. A loving family was infighting. Brother against brother, my brothers against my dad and vice versa, my grandparents, my uncles, there was this thing going on. All because of me. And what we can quickly do if our family isn't locked into a fellowship called Al-Anon, we take people hostage. And there was infighting because everyone had a different view on how to get me well. Throw them out, take them in, give them money, no money, whatever it might be. Besides all the stealing I did and all the lies and all the things, the damage I caused, the police department scenes, the emergency rooms, the wrecked cars, all of it. And now I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I got this wreckage behind me, and I'm going to come in here and say, I didn't drink, and that's all I need to do, I'm a winner. Done. Well, what about the wreckage? How selfish and self-centered am I if I just say, all I have to do is not drink today, and I'm a winner? It's great I'm not drinking. I'm not even in charge of that one, by the way. But what about those folks? How do I even begin to go back and make amends, especially to people who love us like family members? Sometimes going back to an employer or an old friend, even an ex, might be easier than going back to people who raised you. How do you fix this? Who they've heard millions of I'm sorries, it won't happen again, I swear to you, I take an oath, and 2 minutes later we break it. How do we go back and convince them? My actions will convince them more than my words, by the way. I'm not there to preach a sermon because they're there to see one. So it becomes for me with my family, and still is 28 years later, this living amends. I don't have to think about that anymore. I've been transformed to some degree where who I be is a spiritual man. I don't have to remember to be kind and loving. It's how God made me. As a result of this work, that's what happens to folks like us. We walk in here banged up, upside down. Our design for living does not exist. It's all about me. Even when I'm treating you nice, it's still about me. And then something happens to the removal of self. What the first five steps are going to do is kill off the self. Six and seven is going to further sharpen the tool. And by the time I land in nine, I'm ready to go. I've gotten some spiritual muscles. I have somewhat of a relationship with God. By the way, the relationship I had with God prior to 9 look vastly different in 10, 11, and 12. Because our book says we enter the world of the Spirit. And it seems like the more amends I make, the more God food or soul food I'm given. The more I give of myself to others, it seems like I'm rewarded with more soul food. And I have a different reaction to life, vastly different than the way it was. And I'm clean with the world. I can be transparent with others. I can embrace or accept my humanness and my flaws and all the stuff that comes with this package that's 57 years old. There's a lot of cracks in the armor, but God carries his water in broken pots anyway. And it seems like the more I accept my humanness and my flaws, we can do more godly things because we're not God anymore. We've been shown we're not God. I don't have to pretend to be God. I have to pretend to be spiritual. One of the things that has happened to me many times, a few highlights with this in making amends. When I sit with folks, I hope to get the opportunity to ask them, is there anything you need to tell me? Anything I left out? And I sit and listen. The majority of folks didn't say anything, but a few did. And it was just really interesting and painful to hear their side of the story on the damage I did or how I broke their heart, how I disappointed them, you know, how they thought so highly of me and then they found out I wasn't that guy. And listen to how they lost nights of sleep because of my behavior. And I can lose sight of that sitting in a room of us where we all got a lot of the common problem, common solution. We meet together. We accept each other as we are in most places. And we kind of march along, forgetting what I did out there until you sit with someone in an amends. And it is humbling. I'm not as good as I thought I was or great as I thought I was. I did a lot of damage here and I need to fix this. And the sense of urgency is given to us. Was given to me. I need to make this right and never ever go back to that old way of living. I think I talked about making amends to my family, which was emotionally challenging, more challenging than going to some people that I knew didn't like me and I didn't like them. I was able to approach the man I hated will arise. Most of us have one of them on our list. The timing is perfect if we're in line with God. My timing's always wrong. There's usually a motive attached to it. So what I learned by making amends is I always seek counsel with the sponsor. Even currently, I'll seek counsel with my sponsor. Here's my list. I'm praying over this, and I'm getting this intuitive thought to go see Joe. And I will talk to my sponsor about it to get clearance, to get some input on it. That's accountability, a little bit of humility. But what I always do, I'm always in prayer, even this morning, praying for willingness. Any amends that I'm not aware of, God, please show me what I'm not aware of. Anything that's not on that list, then I just don't see them. Can you show them to me, reveal them to me so I can go out and make it right with the universe? So that circle around the triangle finally closes and becomes whole and complete with no gaps in it. Something happens in prayer when we pray with a sense of urgency, looking for guidance and asking for mercy, strength, courage, endurance. Great things happen. We find that the deeper we go in prayer, it is actually barren from all belief systems, all concepts, and all ideas. The only thing that's living and breathing deep down in the spirit is God. That's the only thing that's growing down there. And we quickly find out that how we've been walking around, how I was walking around with a case of mistaken identity based on belief systems and ideas that I was even given in Alcoholics Anonymous by loving and caring people, by my parents loving and caring people, by friends. And I think that's who I'd be. But something happens the further we go in. In order to find out, I need to find in. And the deeper I go in prayer, and I interior prayer going in with no distractions, seeking God with the desperation of a drowning man, we will find quickly along with the steps that this belief system doesn't work. This is delusional. That is not who I be. And they start to get removed. It can feel really uncomfortable. And we land in this desert, and the only thing that's there is God. And at that point, that's when we wake up. That's the oneness. There's nothing blocking us. And that's when I found complete freedom. That doesn't stay every day because sometimes I am attached to things, but complete freedom where I'm human. My humanness is broken. It's flawed. There's only one who has all power. May I find them now. That one is God. I have found him. And I'd rather bear the pain, the agony of seeking God, regardless how long it takes, than the pain of going without God. And sometimes we think, well, once I find God, it's going to be joyous, happy, and free, and it's going to be wonderful. I'm going to go pick daisies, and everything's going to be great. It'll be Tiny Tim, you know. Old timers know who Tiny Tim is. Young people have no clue what I'm talking about. The awakening, even a rude awakening, is that with God it's so much easier than without, but it is not an easy walk with God. I'm getting disciplined regularly. I'm being pruned regularly. And I don't have much latitude like I used to anymore, and I've been given this conscience. That's the God whisper. You better not do that. That's not very spiritual, and you haven't spoken to me all day. It's kind of, God's like, how long do I have to wait for you? It's interesting how patient God can be with us and how impatient we are with God. But something happened to me several times going into prayer. Over, not just one time, but a repetition, a regular practice, a way of living, a manner of living. I can't fathom leaving my house without dedication to God. I can't fathom going to bed without dedication to God or writing inventory. I can't even fathom going through recovery without a sponsor for guidance, for seeking counsel. And with step nine, it was vital to find out that my time is wrong and God's time is perfect. It says there was a long period of reconstruction ahead. So I'm going to be building. I'm not going to be taking down stuff anymore. I'm going to be building. And when I make amends, I'm helping other people put their lives back together. It's not about me. I mean, I'm there so I don't get drunk again. But what I'm really doing is help people put their lives back together in a simple amends. I'm giving them their self-respect that I ripped off, their self-worth that I ripped off. And I will even share this. When it came to the opposite sex in old relationships, there were some women who were used to having men trash their lives. This is what men do. They come into my life, they trash it, and that's all I'm worth. And somehow we show up and say, my behavior was inappropriate. You do not need to be treated that way, nor deserve to be treated that way. It's a wake-up call. Oh, you mean I'm not worthless? And you see people change. The light in the eyes comes on. What happens with step nine, we go from what we know, which is very tangible, to the world of the unknown. We're entering the world of the spirit. We put one foot in the world of the spirit, and left is right, and right and left, and up is down, and vice versa. Nothing really makes sense. It's the world of the spirit. It's God's neighborhood now. There's somewhere near what I realize that the way, what I think of love, how I approach love, loving feelings, can be vastly different than the way God views love. God's way of loving is going to say, I'm making you homeless. He said, that's not love. In God's will, that just might be love. I don't know. But I had to let go of ideas, attitudes, and emotions. What I think is love might be different than God. What I think is a relationship, God said this is not a relationship. It was waking up. There's a long period of reconstruction ahead. My book says we, not them, must take the lead. God will give me the endurance and the strength, the insight to do things like that. A remorseful mumbling that I'm sorry won't fill the bill at all. I'm sorry doesn't work anymore. How many times are you going to tell me you're sorry, Pete? You know? How many times are you going to say you're going to pay me the money next time you see me? I'm not even listening anymore. It's kind of like if you want to know what my belief systems are, you look at my actions. You want to know how sincere I am. Don't listen to my words. Listen to my actions. Walk with me. Let me walk with you. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. It says this, their defects may be glaring, but chances are our own actions are partly responsible. So I'm sponsoring this new guy a bunch of years ago in Brooklyn, New York. and he had about 15 seconds sober and was finding problems with his wife. And he comes to the meeting, home group, and he walks in and he's just angry. And I said to him, "What's wrong?" He said, "She's really sick." Sounds like a real alcoholic to me already. I said, "Well, what happened?" And he's given me this laundry list of things she did. She don't trust him. He comes home late for a meeting. You know, she's giving him the breathalyzer test when he comes in. You know, the eye test. You know how they are. And he's really angry with her. And I said to him something along the lines of, before I showed him this line, I says, "If you were a clean and sober spiritual man for the last 10 years, you think she would be doing that?" And he just gave me that deer in the headlights look. "And if you were honest and caring and loving and compassionate and practiced fidelity in that relationship, would she be doing that?" Again, the deer in the headlights look. I said, "I'll even go beyond that. There's a chance she wouldn't even be with you, or you wouldn't be her with her if you were sober and spiritual." And then I showed him this. That the reason, good reason, the way she is because of what you brought into her life. That was the last I heard of him, by the way. Never call me again. That's a true story. Yeah. It says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. God's going to show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. That's a profound reaction, a different reaction to life than impatient, give me now. It's all about me. When you're speaking, I'm thinking what I'm going to say. Rather than patience, kindness, tolerance, and love. Our book says love and tolerance of others is our code. It's impossible, I found, for myself to practice that stuff if I still got 100 voices from the past that haven't been silenced yet. Because I'm still driven by my past. Which means, even though I present to you that I got it together and I'm spiritual, I'm still running on fear. What if I'm found out? What if I'm caught? I know some folks who got legals in other states. They need to answer the warrants. They need to ring, go answer the bell. And they're kind of ducking and diving in South Florida for a year, 2 years. They'll get to it. None of them are staying sober. Wonder why. I have a buddy of mine up north who was sponsoring a guy who had 5 years doing the same thing. And he told him, "You need to go. It's way of your making amends to the state. You need to go answer the bell and show up and say, I'm here." The guy had no attachments to a wife or children, and that's what he did. He got a reduced sentence, did a little time in jail, has been sober since. Never been freer. What lengths am I willing to go to have this relationship with God and get free of my alcoholism? Because while I'm sober, I'm free of alcohol and other substances, but what about my alcoholism? An old timer says it's not wasm, it ism. Because I'm sober, it doesn't mean, okay, alcoholism, so okay, he's done, we'll go on and get somebody else. No, it's waking up even louder because I'm not pouring booze on my alcoholism anymore. It's raw, and it's talking, and it's directing me. It says the spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. We have the nine-step promises, and a great thing to do with the nine-step promises, because it talks about how we're going to react, how our life looks as a result of God and getting free of our past. But if we put when we were drunk, I have found a new freedom, new reaction to life. My financial security disappeared. What happened? Same thing with the nine-step promises happened to me when I'm drunk. When I'm drinking, everything's great. Everything's beautiful. I'm Moses. I'm an athlete, I'm a musician, whatever you want me to be, I'll be for the night, it's great. And I'm good at it. And then the next morning I wake up and I'm not so good at it. Right? What happens to me as I'm starting to make amends, and this is, for me, my favorite part of all of this, is as a result of this work. Step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these 12 steps. So by the time I get to 12, I've had a spiritual awakening. And what the book tells us to do is what to do with that awakening. Step 12 in the big book is not talking about the spiritual awakening part because we've got it. So where does this thing begin? Anywhere in those steps. By the time we get to step 10, though, it says we've had it. We've entered the world of the spirit. It does 10-step promises talking about being in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I haven't sworn the stuff off. The problem has been removed. This is all a result of a spiritual awakening. We get recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and how I go through life looks vastly different than even prior to that. It even looks different as I'm making amends compared to entering the world of the Spirit. And I'm supposed to grow in understanding and effectiveness, and I start to love the effect produced by God, and I'm repulsed at what I used to do. Even some of the antics I did sober. What was I thinking? How could I do that? And the mind isn't driving me, and I'm not a slave to my mind anymore. With that constant stream of thinking all the time, constantly thinking, it's all fear. Woulda, coulda, shoulda, all the time. Setting up these scenes. It's always in the future or always in the past. It's never present because God's only in the present. The mind can't exist there. Enter the world of the Spirit. It says, this thought, as I clean up amends, brings me to step 10. I haven't gotten it yet. Brings me. I'm knocking on a door. Which suggests I continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as I go along. What my book is asking me to do here is a daily 4 through 9. This inventory, this thing to get through today, this new GPS. If I've harmed someone, I make amends quickly. I discuss it with someone. I'm doing a 4 through 9. I have an inventory. I'm discussing. I'm looking at defects of character. I'm cleaning it up as I'm moving along. It keeps me free. It keeps me transparent. It keeps me right with God. It keeps me right-sized. Many times I get calls from folks who were sober a while, and a few years, 5 years, 10 years. And they're struggling. They feel disconnected from God. They're not in that place. They always tell me, I want to get back to that place I was. And I tell them, you can't. You can't go back to where you were. But there was a time I was on fire, Pete, and I was really connected. I said, well, what were you doing? And everything they were doing to get to the power, once they got to the power, they stopped doing. And when I speak to them, they have some outstanding amends that they haven't completed yet that they could be making without causing more harm. I said, well, how come you haven't done this? They don't really have a sponsor. They have a guy or she has a woman, but they're not in contact. It's when things get heavy, they call up the sponsor. That's not a sponsor. That's a pinch hitter. Bottom of the night, you need a pinch hitter to get up there and maybe get a hit. That's lousy recovery. That's shaky recovery. So when things are going good, in other words, you're in charge of your recovery in your life, so you're in charge of your God. Because I'm keeping me sober. And when it hits the fan, I call up that sponsor or I call up someone in AA. I give them half the truth because no one's going to tell the whole truth. I give them what I want to hear. I feel good for a while. I get the deck shuffled again and put back in place and I kind of poop along. I'm good again until it hits the fan again. That's bondage. That's delusional sobriety. Prayer meditation, fair at best. In fact, there is no meditation. The 11th step is pretty much out the window. And the way they work with their sponsor is how they work with their sponsees. So we got nothing going on except one thing. Everything that got me to that power is being eroded again. Now, God can't get eroded, and God ain't going anywhere. God is there. But what I do, figuratively speaking, is take a step away and take another step away and take a step away. It's not too deep. It's okay. It'll get a little bit further and then boom, it hit a sinkhole and it's over. And we don't even know what that day looks like when it shows up. So I enter the world of the Spirit. My next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. I vigorously commence this way of living as I clean up the past. Vigorously. Some action involved here. I'm breaking a sweat. I'm still going to any lengths. When I say I mean us, going to any lengths to get right with God. It's interesting. In step 3, they talk about any lengths. In step 9, they talk about any lengths. In step 9, 8 and 9, I should say, they talk about any lengths. Constantly remind us, keep it going. It says, we cease fighting anything or anyone. There's a dash. And it says, even alcohol. Almost like alcohol's, oh, by the way, like an afterthought, even booze. Now, when I first come in here, I was fighting the drink every day. It was with me. Even though I stopped drinking, I was thinking about it a lot. But at this point, they're bringing us into the problem has been removed. And how do I get this book to meet me where I currently am if I'm going through the book right now with a bunch of years sobriety? Cease fighting anything or anyone. Who am I wrestling with? not the same people I came in here with, but currently, who am I wrestling with? With me? Am I disgusted with myself? Am I frustrated by myself? Am I arguing with people in the head? Is everyone annoying me all the time? Am I taking other people's inventory? And worse, am I starting to go back to my childhood and relive all the pain that's showing up right now, and I become restless and discontented? Or am I joyous, happy, and free, accepting my past as it was, accepting myself as I am? Cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. It says, for by this time, sanity will have returned. What a tremendous promise a book just put out there. What a goal to shoot for. In step two, they said, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It's an arrival. At some point, I'm going to get to this place of sanity, wholeness of mind, restored to sanity, compassion, understanding, forgiveness, and a relationship with God. A sense of innocence, if you will. In step 10, they said, it's here. They deliver the package that was promised to me way back in step 2. Now, for some of us, we get it way prior to step 10, but by the time we get to step 10, they said, it's here. You're free of you. I'm free of me. I'm free of my mind. And what I have to do to stay that way is just grow. If that makes sense, to stay where I am free, I have to grow. If not, I begin to go. It says, I will be seldom interested in liquor. I think if they wrote down, you'll never be interested in liquor, it throws the book into a world of controversy and self-righteousness. And they know we're not perfect. Seldom be interested in liquor. Here's where I get into trouble, because I've gotten into trouble many times in what I'm about to say. I haven't thought about drinking in many years. Forget the obsession. I haven't thought about drinking in many, many years. I haven't thought about using non-conference approved dry goods in many years. I've been around people who drink. I've been around people who drug. I've done a million 12-step calls. I watched the beer commercials on TV, all of it. I was at a wedding this weekend. A lot of young folks banged up. There was a half a dozen and basically spent the wedding in the bathroom. Pop out, jaws over here. I'm great. Right? Like, back in the bathroom again. Right? Seldom be interested in liquor. What a great promise. The very thing that owned me, it's there, I'm here, what else is going on? This has to happen for me to do a successful 12-step call. And when I say successful, not that I walk out sober, where I don't walk into Joe's house and there's blackberry brandy all over and I want to dive in head first. Or there's a pound of cocaine and I want to go in head first. I do at least a couple of bumps before I get out of here. I'm not salivating. I'm not interested in that. And because I'm less interested in me nowadays and more interested in what I can give to others, a life of a servant has no time to be consumed with self. Prior to the way I walked in here, it was all about me. It says, if tempted, big if, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally. Now, there was a time if you were drinking, I'm drinking. I walk in and say, I'm not drinking. I'm definitely not drinking. You drink? Oh, yeah, I'll have a drink. There's a great story, and I don't know if it's in Comes of Age. Pat would know this. Bill Wilson is going on a golf trip, and the bus breaks down. It's Armistice Day. And he's telling the bartender, you know, his alcoholism story. I'm crazy when I drink. And he's going on and on and on about bad things that happen to me when I drink. And the bartender says, drinks around the house. It's Armistice Day. Bill says, give me a drink. He says, but you must be crazy after what you just said. I guess I am. Give me a drink. That's how I react around booze. I just got out of rehab. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Oh, you're using? Okay, I'll take a little. I'll just do a little. Just a taste. Just a taste. And then I'm panhandling 20 minutes later. I react sanely and normally and find that this has happened automatically. This is really important, not only for the promises, and I'm running out of time here, but, and if you allow me, when people say this, they mean well, but it contradicts the book. Remember the pain of yesterday, keep it green, think the drink through, play the tape, the end. Take a detox commitment so you see the sick and suffering. That'll give you enough remember how the pain was to stay sober another day. That's all self-will, by the way. That's all self-reliance. What my book says is this. I react sanely and normally and find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on my part. I do not need my mind anymore. I have found I'm most successful when my mind has not shown up. When my mind shows up, I have problems, which means you're about to have problems too. When I'm null and void, when the mind isn't present, I'm doing good because I'm listening to that other voice. I may have shared this last week. It's kind of you wake up in the morning, right? And you sit down to have your first cup of coffee. We'll assume you prayed and meditated. And you're feeling a little Moses-y that morning. I'm ready, good to go. AA is going to take it on. And you sit down and have your cup of coffee or maybe 12 Red Bulls and a carton of cigarettes, right? Okay. And then you go meditate. And you sit down at your table. So you're sitting at the table. And you think you're the only one at the table. You know who's at the table? We got the AA spiritual man or woman who's sitting at the table, right? That's the guru, that's the sponsor, that's the meeting maker, the step guy or woman, the Moses person, the Mother Teresa, there she is. And right next to him or her is the jock. The guy's got to get to the gym before he eats. The guy's got to run, work out, get more muscles, and wear a shirt six sizes too small and go to home group that night. That's that guy, he's sitting at the table, right? And next to me got the business guy who's constantly focused on money and getting that stuff. We live in South Florida, Boca Raton. I have a Rolls. I need 12 to keep up with the neighbors. And I got to get more, make more money, be a career man, make the money because that makes me a man. You got him sitting at the table. Then you got the little wounded child with unresolved issues about what mommy and daddy did to them. And they're full of self-pity and guilt and remorse and anger and hurt. They're sitting at the table. Then you got the lustful one. Right, you got the sex kitten and you got Joe Stud, depending on your sex. But nowadays it really doesn't make a difference anymore. They're sitting there. They're sitting there saying, hey, I need fill in the blank. We listen to every one of those voices. They demand obedience. That's why when you ask an alcoholic how you doing, we say, I'm so tired. Because I'm sitting at 45 people at my dinner table and my breakfast table, and they follow me into the car, they follow me to work, they walk into the home group with me. Except when I walk in, you say, how I'm doing? I'm going, I'm wonderful. I'm absolutely wonderful. Right. And they're in the parking lot, they'll take you home. So you get all these people at the table. I'm not in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I'm still driven by all these voices, and I have to play all these roles. They demand obedience. There's one other voice at the table. While we're listening to them, and submitting to every one of those voices. There's one other voice at the table. That's the God, the real God. That's the whisper. Pay no attention to them. You walk with me. Make sure you get your meeting tonight. You ought to call your sponsor. Get your work on time. Eat good. I got your back. I love you. You know what we do with that voice? Oh, please stop. What's this annoying voice? In Christianity, they talk about the offense of the cross. When people see the cross, they go, uh-oh, because it's a spotlight. It's a searchlight on all the stuff I'm not doing that I should be doing, the things I'm doing I shouldn't be doing. That's why nobody likes it. This God voice is the same type of thing where when it talks to me, I'm like annoyed by it. I don't want to hear this voice. It's annoying to me. It's gnawing at me. But the others I will gladly listen to. Got it backwards. Something happens when we start to wake up, clean up amends, enter the world of the Spirit. I'm listening for that voice. God, please talk to me. Just that when he talks to me and the help comes in, it's not the voice I thought was going to come, nor the help I thought was going to show up. But it certainly is God. And I walk with confidence and trust it. Because I start to recognize the level of awareness is the greatest agent for change. I start to recognize those voices are false voices. This is the only true voice. I can't get that without making amends. Because what happens to me is when I'm listening, I think I'm listening to God, I'm listening to me or one of those other voices who just put on a little mask. We've entered the world of the Spirit. Placed in a position of safe position of neutrality, safe and protected. It says, I've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist. What a tremendous promise. That thing that I walked in with does not exist anymore. Kind of got on with my life now. Some folks look at A as a bridge back to life, and if that floats your boat, great. It isn't, for me, a bridge back to life. It is my life. Some folks say, I need to find balance in my life. Don't, because you'll never get it. Because I'm trying to find balance. My mind is trying to find balance. That has never worked. It's a broken instrument. So I surrender to God, and with a life of invitation, God will tell me what needs to be done that day, and here's my balance. My balance today was I go to work, I come home, I rest, I get dressed because I have a commitment tonight, I'll go home and have dinner and go to bed. There's my balance. Now, if I try to figure this out and make arrangements and tweak it, I'm out of balance, even though I'm trying to balance it. The problem does not exist for me. I'm recovered. I've entered the world of being recovered. Last thing, and I'll get out of here. It says, it's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels, my accomplishments of yesterday. I'm headed for trouble if I do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. I'm not cured of alcoholism. What I have is a daily reprieve. Stay of execution is what a reprieve is. A daily stay of execution that all hinges on my maintenance of my spiritual condition. Not maintain, but care of the soul. There's a book that came out many years ago called Care of the Soul. How am I nurturing or getting my, what am I doing to get my soul food? Well, the great way to get soul food is serve others. We can go meditate and om and ring chimes and bells and all that and burn incense and do all that. It's wonderful. You want to get real soul food? Go help somebody. Go help a homeless person. Like the guy outside this church. You know, ask him his name, tell him your name. Get a newcomer. Sit down next to an old timer and see if they're doing okay. Even though you don't have a chair, commitment setting up, set up chairs. Things like that. Be of service. God allowed me to do something pretty fun. Everyone was laughing at me. I didn't think much about it. I'm at this wedding, and it was a grassroots wedding. And I'm in a suit, and I set up the chairs. And at the end of the meeting, I was sweeping and mopping floors and throwing garbage in the dumpster. And I'm dressed like this, by the way. And, you know, doing all that stuff and getting dirty and greasy. And, you know, it was like, but what else am I supposed to do? A life of a servant. And I went home, in a sense, with a full belly and a whole soul, not a hole in the soul. That's what God allows us to do. That's all I got. Peace.
All right. Can we thank Peter one more time? We got Fred coming up for our secretary's report.
Is you?
No, it's me.
Hi, my name's Fred. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Jessica to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, everyone. Alcoholic named Jessica. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured? That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. Page 23. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the Ford to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Everyone who's available for a sponsorship, can we please meet them up front after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room over here where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the meeting itself is at 7:15. We have a large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Fred. All right, we have tonight's session and all past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, and those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker can line up down the aisle when we're done. All right, and we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
All right, see you guys all next Monday or next Thursday.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do is keep on praying. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. It doesn't matter.
zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby. Yes, when you're laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. Stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby, and I hope.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed days, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful. Of people going by, I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying and watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And I'll be your friend.
need a friend.